Marini's Media.
Totally Football Show. Today, Bundesliga. Football, bloody Haaland. Dortmund prodigy grabs another brace and heats up title race. Italy, waterfall as Mazzarri walks at Torino. La Liga, why Atletico are now the third best team in Madrid. Unhappy Mbappe in Ligue 1. Plus, we get started early on the next Ronaldo v Messi controversy. All in this Toby Football Show in association with Paddy Power. Hello, listener. Thanks for joining us in our Tuesday Euro Bureau. We've got all the usual favourites. James Horncastle's here.
Good day to you.
Alvaro Romeo.
Hola.
Julien Laurent.
Bonjour.
And Raphael Honigstein just jetted in from the Spanish capital.
Woo!
Hello.
Hello there. Sorry we're a bit late. Sorry in particular to you, Ahmed Iyerdi. When's this getting released? Not going to lie, lads, I've ruined my Tuesday morning train journey. I've had to listen to people on the tube. Circumstances beyond our control. Ahmed and other listeners, there was an unexploded wartime bomb here in London, Soho, and we got evacuated when we were trying to lay this down on Monday afternoon. But here it is now anyway. Hello. Tony Robertson wants to know, Julien Laurent, did you get an invite to Neymar's birthday party?
Yes, of course, like every year. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, the dress code was all white, so there was
but
a lot
you didn't
of people.
Go.
There was a lot of people dressed in white.
Uh-huh.
Between 300 and 400 of us.
Did you actually
cool.
go?
It was cool. It was cool. It was in a nightclub in the 16th arrondissement in Paris, in the Palais uh-huh. Tokyo.
Right.
Quite a posh place. You know, I've been a few times before. But Neymar took over. He had a little speech just before midnight.
What did he say?
And then he thanked everybody, but not the sponsors that helped him. Usually he thanks the sponsors as well.
Right.
Like Red Bull, for example, where the one organized the last two parties.
Uh-huh.
This time it was just about how happy he was, and everybody had turned up. I mean, everybody, I mean. There was no Thomas Tuchel, no Leonardo. At that time, no Kylian Mbappe.
Mm-hmm.
So now everybody turned up. But there was Juju, so, you know, it's cool.
That is cool, Jules.
Yeah.
Oh, nice one.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Anything else we should know about what happened on the party?
I mean, Wanda had the most revealing dress that she could have worn, but you would expect that from Wanda. You could basically pretty see everything.
Wanda Icardi,
indeed.
It was kind of a belt, was it?
It was, yeah. I mean, it was just so open in the front, like it was, yeah.
Right.
But you know, it's... and then nothing else, really. It was
okay.
Good. It was not too late. The players left at 1 a.m. and the party finished at 3.
Right.
And obviously they have a match on Tuesday night. So that was Sunday night and they had a match on Tuesday. So a lot of people at the club were not already very keen that the party was going on. But hey, it's Neymar and it's his party. So, you know, it's a very important day for him. So
brilliant. Jules, thank you for that. And thank you, Tony Robertson, for your question. Let's get this party started with the headlines from around Europe. Alvaro, what's making news in La Liga?
Getafe being third.
Okay.
That's as simple as that. That's pretty impressive for a club that... promoted to La Liga again a couple of years ago, 3 years ago, if I am not mistaken. And the method of this manager, who is basically, as they call him, Simeone number two, is impressing everybody.
And he's ahead of Simeone number one, because Atleti are down in, what, sixth place, right?
Yes.
They
are six now, yeah.
After their defeat in the derby, which you'll be telling us all about very shortly. James, in Italy...
Well, we've got a third generation of Maldinis playing for AC Milan as Daniel came on and made his debut in Serie A in stoppage time against Verona. We've got that controversy, which is still going on between Rocco Commisso, the Fiorentina owner, and Juventus after Juventus got two penalties, fairly, in my opinion, in the 3-0 win against his Fiorentina side at the weekend. And it's hard to choose what to go with next. Mazzarri getting the sack at Torino.
Maybe that. Yeah.
Well, we're here all of them.
Anyway.
Gaucci.
Of course, Luciano Gaucci.
Yeah, passing away.
Big chat about Italian football later on in the show. Jules, well, we heard from you.
Hang on, I had more things to say.
Oh.
The clash between Tuchel and Mbappe.
That was huge.
And Neymar, the
party, though. And Neymar being yellow carded for showboating.
For showboating. And the reaction to that in France, a referee saying you're being too spectacular.
Ridiculous.
Tone it down.
Yeah,
crazy.
It's a big debate.
Really, really looking forward to hearing about that as we are the latest from the Bundesliga with yet more drama at the top.
Yes, RB Leipzig losing their lead thanks to a 2-2 draw at home to Gladbach. But the real story was not one yellow card, but two yellow cards for Alassane Player. He was sent off for a double descent within a few seconds, courtesy of this new directive that is supposed to crack down on all sorts of unsporting behaviour.
Right.
But it looked well over the top, and it allowed Bayern to reclaim the top thanks to a 3-1 win away to Mainz.
Okay, Rafa, I want to hear more about that. So up next, let's talk Bundesliga.
Der Ball immer noch bei Leipzig, immer wieder bei Nkunku. Nkunku schießt mal aus der Ferne! Tor! 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 2-2 durch den wunderbaren Fernschuss von Nkunku, der sich am linken Strafraumeck so 2 Meter versetzt, einfach mal den Herz fasst und mit rechts abzieht. Und dann ist der Ball rechts im Tor, knapp neben den Pfosten, schlägt das Ding ein. Jan Sommer ohne Chance, ohne Möglichkeit, diesen Ball zu halten.
Christopher Nkunku there with his stunning last-minute equaliser as Leipzig a battle back to take a point, a Borussia Mönchengladbach. Rafa, a lot of drama in that game, but as you say, a bit of a refereeing precedent that's caused a bit of controversy in the Bundesliga. Explain.
A fair bit. This is Alassane Player complaining because a foul, well, it looked like a foul to him, it certainly looked like a foul to many neutrals, wasn't given. He was dispossessed.
Right.
He turned round into the direction of the referee, sort of remonstrated without being overly aggressive or, as far as we know, saying any bad French words starting with P. But there is no real aggravation, but referee stops the game, shows him a yellow card, and then Player just keeps going, making his gestures, you know, kind of waving away, saying this is ridiculous. So he shows him a second yellow, and he's sent off. This is in the 61st minute. Gladbach were 2-1 up at the time. They'd already conceded a silly goal because Jan Sommer gave the ball away after catching it. They were in control of the game, nevertheless, at least still in the lead. And then, of course, everything changed, being one man down. And then they defended and defended and defended. And then, as you said, in the last minute, they conceded that goal. But
the amazing thing that the referee actually stopped the game to give this yellow card, which presumably Leipzig weren't happy with either.
Well, Sabitzer wanted to play on and didn't understand why this game, why he couldn't just, you know, go and attack the goal.
Right.
Because the game was stopped, as you said, it looked to me a little bit as if they wanted to make an example of the player, at least Stieler. He doubled down afterwards saying, you know, this is unacceptable. If you show disrespect, you have to expect to get punished. He continued to do it. You know, what am I supposed to do? I mean, he went in front of the microphones and really defended his decision. And a lot of people, I must say, backed the general principle of it, which was strengthened over the winter break when the German FA, together with the referee, said, we will crack down on these sort of stuff harder than before. But I still think there needs to be a measure of appropriateness between what's happened and the punishment. And it seemed to be out of kilter.
Disproportionate.
Disproportionate.
Is it a regular thing that the referees go and explain their decisions to the media then after games?
Yeah, I mean, if they're really controversial and if they really are seen as game-changing or as somehow in need of an explanation, this one certainly was, then it's up to them. They can go and speak in a mixed zone or they can't, or they don't have to. But a lot of them, to their credit, do. Just in this case, I think it didn't really reflect so well on Stieler because he also managed to say, well, Player should have taken it like a man when I showed him the first yellow, which again, it's a bit dubious as a rationale for why you should send somebody off then in such quick succession. And even some of the Leipzig players and officials afterwards said, you know what, this was probably a bit harsh, which does show that perhaps the decision was a little bit over the top.
Okay. Well, Bayern benefit, those 2 points dropped for Leipzig means that the Bavarians move into first place. They're 1 point clear of RB Leipzig. Borussia Mönchengladbach and Borussia Dortmund are both 3 points off the lead. Bayern with a 3-1 win at Mainz. That's put them top of the table for the first time since October, is that right?
Yeah, because it's been Leipzig and Gladbach all the way until last weekend. Bayern didn't play particularly well, but the game was won within half an hour, having scored 3 goals. Thiago, once again, phenomenal, wonderful solo effort. And Mulan Lewandowski, who have both been in very good form, adding the other two.
That Lewandowski header, pow.
Pow, but also no marking. So if you don't mark Lewandowski in the box, then he will pow.
He will.
One or two in.
That's his 150th goal for Bayern Munich.
Yeah, and he's only behind Gerd Müller and Karl-Heinz Rummenigge now.
Wow.
Who are still, as far as Müller's concerned, way ahead of him, but the fact that he's coming close to Rummenigge with far fewer games is quite remarkable.
Okay.
The bad news of this last few days is that Ivan Perisic picked up an ankle injury, which will rule him out, certainly for the first leg against Chelsea, probably in the second one as well. Considering that Kingsley Coman is not fully fit and hasn't played yet since the winter break, that is a bit of a blow, buying a little bit light on those wide positions. But and nevertheless,
Gnabry
is okay.
He's on the bench, right?
Yeah, he had a bit of an Achilles problem over the winter break and has been used sparingly, but he should be fine.
And on Saturday, it's Bayern RB Leipzig, yeah? So
first v. second.
Oh,
it's
man.
So big. And it feels as if it's bigger for Leipzig than Bayern, because if Bayern were to win that, and at home you have to favour them, it would be 4 points between them and Leipzig. And I'm sensing there's a bit of nervousness creeping into Leipzig. If you look at how Nagelsmann reacted last week, we talked about that, because they know that this is a chance that might not come around that quickly again. Yes, Leipzig will strengthen. Yes, Leipzig will improve. They are run in a way that will keep them competitive and contenders for years to come. But this is a season where Bayern started very poorly, 40 points at the winter break. Dortmund have started even worse. And Leipzig, if they were to lose this, I think would lose a lot of momentum that they've been able to build up before.
We'll talk about Dortmund and Erling Haaland very shortly, but Richard Brown says, do you, Raphael, expect to see Flick, Ten Hag, Tuchel or somebody else in charge of Bayern at the start of next season? Who's your money on?
I wouldn't put any money on it, but Flick has put himself in a position where he's now being considered a viable contender to keep the job beyond the end of the season. A lot of it will hinge on their performance in the Champions League. If they were to get knocked out by Chelsea, or if they were to shown up by whoever they come up against in the next round, that would still create maybe a bit of doubt in the boss's minds whether he is the right guy. But so far, Bayern's results and the performances have been very strong. This is 6 wins in a row now in the league.
Mm.
The 2 games that they have lost against Leverkusen and Gladbach were freak results because they completely dominated both games. So it could have been 8. It's nearly perfect as far as the results are concerned. And certainly the football has been very, very good. Maybe the best football we have seen since a certain Pep Guardiola left. So you can understand why there is now, I think, increasingly a groundswell of opinion, if you will, inside the club that goes towards giving Flick the job full time.
They've never scored this many goals at this point in a Bundesliga season, Bayern. 57 in 20 matches. Obviously, not all of those have come under Hansi Flick, but quite a few of them.
Quite a few, but not as many as Dortmund have scored in the last three.
Well, yeah. How many, Rafa?
15.
Another,
five every time.
Another 5-goal haul this weekend. Dortmund, as they move up into third place, this time Union Berlin were the victims. And yes, Erling Haaland did it again. Typical teenager. Gets a new brace every week.
Nice.
Yeah.
Union.
That's the word. Union. That's them.
Yes, but slightly disappointing as far as his output is concerned, because he got a full 77 minutes this time from the start and still only 2 goals.
Can you call 77 minutes full? He got 77 minutes anyway.
By comparison to his
first
2 games, which he came off as a sub and played less than a half in each.
Right.
That is quite concerning.
I see. But, it's remarkable. Can you think of any precedent? I mean, we asked this question last week and now his start has got even more incredible. Can you think of any
Well, someone did
precedent?
Write in that Rooney scored 3 goals in the Champions League on his debut for Man
yeah,
United,
but,
which is
yeah,
something
but,
that...
But it's his debut and yeah, then the good. Game after and yeah. then the game after that and then again.
Isn't it true that he, in 2020, on his own, he scored more goals than 15 of the Bundesliga teams in 2020? Who haven't scored 7 yet in 2020?
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, 7-3 is something that most clubs would be happy with. But, I mean, the whole Dortmund team are a joy to behold.
I don't care about Dortmund. I don't want to know anything about Dortmund.
So
they play some really good stuff. I mean, uh-huh. they still give away chances. Even Union had some opportunities. And it was interesting to see both Hakimi and Royce, when they were substituted, they reacted very strongly with a bit of petulance, which maybe suggests that the authority of Lucien Favre isn't quite as strong or secure as it should be after such a great start to 2020. But what I can say, Jules, is that if Dortmund attack with a sort of movement and just brilliant play, and we have to mention Jadon Sancho there, who's been slightly overshadowed by what happened with Haaland, but has actually been sensational, scoring now again and becoming the first player under 20 to get 25 goals in the Bundesliga. An unbelievable achievement, really, if you think about it. But yet another sign of just how good Dortmund are in attack. And there's so many options, there's so much variety, so much movement. I think that PSG will do well to defend in that first leg. Of course, they're still favourites over the two legs, but I think that first game in Dortmund will be very tricky.
Creeping closer, Jules.
I'm not going to watch the first game. I'm away skiing, so the second game, I'm at Liverpool Atletico Madrid, so I won't be watching either. I don't care. Yeah. I don't care about PSG. Yeah. I don't care about Dortmund. I don't care about Jadon Sancho.
Don't believe any of that, Jules. You're going to be glued to a screen
PSG
somewhere.
What PSG have on their side is that game management experience and in big knockouts. And
Sancho's got 12 goals and 12 assists so far this season, which is crazy numbers. Yeah. Those worrying Haaland figures, 7 goals in 136 minutes of Bundesliga action so far. 7 goals, 136 minutes. It's crazy.
And what is crazy is that he's still, by his own admission, not 100% fit.
Right. What's not? Is he kind of a little bit carrying a bit of weight or what?
No. He looks very shapely. No, the issue is a knee complaint. He went into the winter break suffering from a slight knee complaint. That's why he didn't fully train. That's also the reason why Favre hasn't been playing him more regularly, or at least as a starter until now. So he will only get better.
Raul writes in and says, will Haaland v Mbappe be Gen Z's Ronaldo v Messi rivalry? Great question, Raul. And it's one that will be very, very topical in a couple of weeks' time. What do you think, Jules?
Yeah, I think it's very possible that one is 19, the other one is 21. And, you know, it's the same gap that Messi and Ronaldo have as well. And you could easily see them two dominating football like Messi and Ronaldo have. I don't know if they will win as many Ballon d'Ors and stuff like that. Yeah, they are.
I mean, Neymar, like they were, Pjanic, obviously.
Like they were
Sancho.
For the Messi and Ronaldo generation as well. So, but they certainly look very, very strong and above everybody else.
I'm just not sure that either of them will actually play for Real Madrid and Barcelona, which is part of the
key. I was going to say that is the key as well. Part of the narrative of the Messi and Ronaldo thing has been the teams they play for as well. And we shouldn't forget that. When Messi and Ronaldo played for Manchester United and Barcelona, there was not such a rivalry.
When are we going to see Odegaard stepping up into that kind of category? Is his loan spell going
to... He can choose whether returning to Real Madrid or not. It's a little bit down to him. He can stay at Real Sociedad one more year. And it will be all down to what happens with Luka Modric this summer, whether Luka Modric stays at Real Madrid or not. If he doesn't, probably Odegaard will return to Real Madrid. And if Real Sociedad qualifies for Champions League, it could be a good thing for him as well to stay one more year at the club.
All right, let's move on to a Kylian in the name of Mbappe and all the many stories from Ligue 1 after this.
It seems as though Serie A is a bit of a dumping ground these days, doesn't it? Where all the Premier League's footballing flops are sent to get them off the wage bill. It's literally a weekly reminder for Man United of all their very expensive mistakes. But thankfully, with Paddy Power's money-back specials, not all your mistakes cost you as much. Get money back as a free bet on football every week. See on site for the latest. Paddy Power, home of the money back special. Selected markets only. T's and C's apply. 18+. BeGambleAware.org.
On Spotify, smart speaker, and podcast platforms everywhere. This is the Totally Football Show from Muddy Knees Media.
Mbappé qui est lancé, Mbappé qui est lancé, le crochet, voilà, le but de Kylian Mbappé, ça c'est du grand, grand classique, la sixième passe décisive cette saison de Neymar pour Kylian Mbappé, la conclusion...
Jules, title race is heating up in France, the title of most unhappy PSG star, that is, because you've got Kylian Mbappé, who had a mood,
yes, big
and
time.
So did Neymar. Should we start with Kylian Mbappe? What went on here?
He was subbed off after 69 minutes when PSG were 5-0 up.
Five.
At the Parc des Princes against Montpellier. He scored already, one.
And he was subbed off, what, to give Icardi a bit of a run out?
Yeah, Icardi and Cavani both came on, and Sarabia, who played really well and scored as well again, and Mbappe went off. And from as soon as his number went up, you could see on his face that he was clearly not happy. Clearly he didn't know that was the plan, that he would only play 70 minutes. And I think when Tuchel, where Tuchel made a mistake, and I'm not justifying what Mbappe did, but Mbappe would have walked past Tuchel, maybe tapped his hand or shook his hand, I don't know. But Tuchel stops him to have a word. And he didn't need to do that in front of everybody, in front of the cameras, because as soon as he did that, you saw that Mbappe retaliated, and there was that 1 minute exchange where he got really heated, and there was clearly they put their hand in front of their mouth, but you could tell there was something going on. And if Tuchel let him go and sit on the bench as angry as he was, and then sort it out in the dressing room where no one can see, it's much better than what he did there in front of everyone.
The optics were pretty bad from Tuchel's point of view. It looked like he was very much the one supplicating.
Yes, you're right. Yeah. And he knows as well, because this is not the first time, unfortunately, because I think it's a really bad habit from Mbappe. Remember in the return fixture in Montpellier, he was not happy to come off. Against Nantes, he was not happy to come off. In the Bruges game in the Champions League, where he scored a hat-trick in half an hour,
was not
at
happy
the
to
end,
come
he said, I wanted to show Tuchel that he cannot not play me.
Right.
And I think that sort of mentality, let not forget, he's still only 21. It's just not, I don't think it's the right thing to do. The big debate back home is like, was he right to react the way he did? And someone like Christophe Dugarry, for example, the former World Cup winner, said he was outraged to see Mbappe at 21 in front of the whole stadium, the whole team, the cameras and everything, responding like this to Tuchel. People said, if you get the Mbappe point of view, Mbappe says Tuchel thinks I'm like an under-19 player. Neymar is never taken off. Di Maria is never taken off, but he always takes me off. I don't understand why. And he says, PSG said that I'm a superstar. They value me, and yet the manager keeps taking me off.
Wow. It's not great, is it?
It's a bit
mine
tense.
Mine goes back to when Frank Ribery threw a strop coming off for Bayern Munich, and everyone
but it happens
just
everywhere.
Laughed at his face on the bench.
Because like Ralph was saying, at Dortmund, Reus and Hakimi, and that's what Tuchel said after the game on Saturday. He said, but it's not just us. You know, it didn't look good for us and for Mbappe and for me. But look at Dortmund. It's the same. Reus was not happy and he hit a bottle or whatever. Hakimi was not happy. In every club, it's the same. Everybody wants to play every game and every minute of every game.
But one consistent thing here, Thomas Tuchel.
Well, for sure, but I just, he's only 21. What's going to happen at 25 if someone takes him off? Like, you know.
Damn.
But I also get his point that he wants to play. And he says, Neymar, Mbappe, and Messi, Ronaldo.
What did Tuchel say about this?
So Tuchel didn't want to say what he said to him. He said, so that was Saturday evening. And he said, we asked him what's going to happen tomorrow. They train at 11, they meet at 10. And he said, it depends how I sleep. Whether it will depend when I wake up if I'm going to speak to him one-on-one, if I'm not going to say anything, or if I say something in front of the whole squad.
Right.
And it turned out that he slept well, he said, and woke up and had a word with Mbappe. Leonardo was there as well, the sporting director. They kind of cleared the air. Mbappe didn't apologise, but he did admit that he overreacted to the substitution.
This just looks rotten, does it? To what, I see there are people already saying that this is Mbappe laying the groundwork for a divorce come summer.
I mean, the divorce between him and PSG PSG and Tuchel? I mean, if he says to PSG, it's either me or Tuchel.
Right.
It's an easy one. And I don't think he would say, and we asked Tuchel yesterday as well, and he said, I don't think this will have an impact, and that's what the club are briefing as well, on his contract negotiation and signing a new deal or him leaving at Real Madrid. But there might be a point where if the tension keeps increasing between him and Tuchel, there might be a case where he said, I don't want to work under Tuchel anymore, so it's either him or me, and then the club will choose Mbappe every day.
Nice that the club were able to celebrate this 5-0 win over Montpellier. among the five goals, the pick had to be the third one, which was that own goal.
Incredible.
But it was amazing.
It was, it was a pinball thing.
Mm-hmm.
There you say pinball. A flipper in French, where Di Maria takes the corner and Savanier clears the ball on the head of Congre, and then the ball goes in.
An own goal off the face of your teammate. Brilliant. Love it.
It was
Congre.
Brilliant.
Yeah, nice. Yeah. Right.
But, I mean, the thing about the 5-0 win, it was a great win. They played really well. It was overshadowed by the Tuchel-Mbappe clash and also
not
by
just
the Neymar.
That, the Neymar, right. Okay, so Neymar, set the scene for us. How did this unfold?
It's the end of the first half, and on the near the touchline, Neymar does a rainbow flick. So if you don't know what a rainbow flick is,
you're listening to the wrong podcast.
Lambretta.
Well, no, but you put the ball between...
They
between
call it in Brazil.
What do they call it?
Lambretta.
Do they?
Yeah, that one, yeah.
Lambretta?
Yeah.
Right. What do they call it in Italy?
Sombrero. No?
An arcobaleno?
Un arcobaleno, yeah. A rainbow, okay.
Yeah, we say soleil in French, or
yeah, this roulette. Is basically where you flick the ball over your head with your mm-hmm. with your
and over the head of the
in
defender.
German we right. call it Scheiße was soll das.
But you don't though, do
always
you,
so
right. What did you just say to our unsuspecting listeners?
Yeah, you didn't say
said,
that.
What's that?
right. Anyway, Jules,
he
does his rainbow flick,
and then the ball goes out of play at some point, like straight after, and then you could see the referee coming towards Neymar and saying something to Neymar, and Neymar looks really like really puzzled. If you look at the video, he looks really like what? And the ref continues, and Neymar's like what? And then you can read on Neymar's lips, he's saying like, I'm playing football, and you're kind of telling me not to play football.
Mm-hmm.
So with the way Neymar responded to the ref and that descent, then the ref books him. So the ref didn't actually book him for the rainbow flick, but right. booked him for the reaction of the ref saying to Neymar, stop showboating, stop doing that because you're going to wind them up.
It's an extraordinary thing for an official to
I've
take it upon himself.
I've never seen anything
to,
like this before.
Yeah. And just to clarify, it wasn't 5-0 at this point and the referee feels he's being, you know, he's taunting the opposition.
Yeah, no.
It was 1-0.
It was just
1-0. And he's Neymar.
Yeah.
So, okay, the yellow card didn't come specifically for the showboating, but post-game, when it was revealed what had gone on, what's the reaction been in France to the referee's attitude?
So first, there's half-time as well, where they all come back into the tunnel and towards the dressing room, and in there, where you've got camera in France for the broadcasters, Neymar says to the referee in Portuguese first, I'm trying to play football, and you book me for playing football. To what the referee says to, or the fourth referee says to him, can you please speak French? And then Neymar in French responds, speak French my ass, to the referee throwing a bottle against the wall. And the whole debate is like, okay, so there's either the camp.
How do you say speak French my ass in French?
Mon cul. Parler français mon cul, yeah.
Oui.
So it's either you're on Neymar's side, like I am,
yep.
where I think if you're good enough, I don't care what you do on the pitch.
Yeah.
It's an entertainment business. If you do a rainbow flick and you can actually pull it out,
yeah.
great on you.
And if the defender clatters you, that's the price you pay.
Yeah, and
the
you know it.
Show.
And you know it. And Neymar is not stupid. He knows that, you know, if he does those showboating, he's right. going to wind them up.
Just a little parenthesis there. Had he already not received a certain amount of kicking from the Montpellier players?
Yes. So right. he was fouled 9 times in that game, which is the most any player has received in France for the
right,
last,
okay.
I don't know, 7 years or something.
Okay, so...
Like 10 minutes in, for example, he nutmegged Andy Delors. Andy Delors, in the days before the game, had a really go at Neymar in the media in France in an interview saying, oh, he's always showboating, he's always winding people up, you know, he shouldn't do that. Paredes, by the way, is even worse because he insults you and all of that. 10 minutes in, Delors comes towards Neymar and Neymar nutmegs him. And after the game, we asked Delors, said, so... You know, you met again with Neymar, and he goes, yeah, and I got nutmegged after 10 minutes. So that was the funny side of it. But the other side of the debate is...
Neymar could say, I fought Delors, but Delors didn't win.
Delors didn't win.
Right, no. Yeah.
But the other side of the team, and I can understand that argument, is you people think you should not humiliate your opponents. That's not what you're not on the pitch to do that.
But you kind of are.
No,
bro. This is not... The game of football is not playing to humiliate the opposition.
Okay.
I mean, this is not my side. My side is with Neymar. Do whatever you want.
Yeah,
I want you
to
do rainbow flicks and
but there is this other of you.
Yeah,
but
I am
sorry,
1,000% with Jules. I mean, in this case, because the same thing happened in Spain with Neymar in the Spanish Cup in 2015. And Barcelona was already beating Athletic de Bilbao. And in the last minute, Neymar did that exactly to a defender called Bustinza. And the Athletic de Bilbao players got infuriated with Neymar. But it wasn't the referee. This makes it even more outrageous, because if it is a referee just telling him to stop with your talent. And I think that there is some sort of respect to the supporters if a player like Neymar tries to entertain them.
Yeah.
And there is a hard work in this, because for Neymar to be able to do this, he's been training a lot. And I think that what I see here is a person who has worked very hard.
Exactly.
Maybe this is a very strange view, but...
It seems
but I think
the
this is a different mentality, because I think in Spain there is actually a premium on humiliating the opposition. It's like this little bullfight thing.
But for
you know,
me...
You want to really wind them up.
But humiliating is as well, to throw the ball out of the ground when you have all the time in the world to play it to a teammate. That is a humiliation to the supporter as well.
Self-humiliation.
But it seems that...
I think it depends really what the referee said. If the referee just told him, look, be careful,
yes,
something might happen
to
you.
Point. It seems that the ref said that to Neymar to protect him, by the sense like, if you keep winding him up, they're going to... kick the shit out of you.
What if he wants to score the best goal he has ever scored, and right. he manages to complete that action and score a goal? Mm. Then we will be clapping and applauding him.
But this is somewhere in midfield. No? Right. He's not going to score from there.
Well, you don't know.
No, he was on the touchline, almost on the touchline. But he was unplayable on Saturday. And there's another incident where he's fouled towards the middle of the pitch. The ref gives the foul. Neymar takes the ball, plays the free kick very quickly to face the guy who just fouled him.
Right.
There's four steps. There's four step overs.
Right.
And the poor Savanier threw her legs out and just get completely humiliated by the four step over. The, and Neymar just wanted for the one the guy that just kicked him just went back to shoot, not humiliate him, but to dribble past him in a 1-on-1 situation. It was incredible. It looked like it was, yeah.
Excellent. Okay. Elsewhere in Ligue 1 this weekend, PSG's lead got extended to 12 points because Marseille only drew in the big game with Palais Sosa's Bordeaux.
Yeah, 42 years now. They're still waiting to win there. It's the longest in French top flight history. I believe one of the longest, surely, in the big five leagues of one team not winning at a stadium.
Yeah, very probably.
Yeah, 35 games now.
Right.
They haven't won. I think the next one in France is 2029, Strasbourg.
But there were a whole bunch of them in this country relating to going to Man United, but all of a sudden they've seemed to
somehow
evaporated.
42 years now.
Toulouse didn't lose.
Yes.
They drew at Amiens.
Yes, 0-0. So, as you remember last week, we talked about the ever longest
losing streak.
Losing streak, that's it, of 12 games by the RC Paris in 1932-1934. Toulouse stopped at 11 after that 0-0 draw.
Okay. There's a certain amount of giggling going on. I'm not sure why.
I don't know why.
What? In 1933, 34, 35, 36, 37, 38.
1933, 34, I said. You're not focused, that's why.
All right, as long as it wasn't the RC Paris that...
Racing Club Paris.
Okay. So
it's a great team.
But elsewhere, third place Rennes had a quiet night on Friday in the Brittany Derby.
Yeah, that was good. That was really good. The whole choreography before the game, and then they scored in the 95th and 97th minute.
At the Brittany Derby.
Oops, you did it again.
This is the Breton Derby.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was them against Nantes, and it was 1-1 heading into the last 10 minutes, but just a ridiculous finale.
Incredible. Yeah, Nantes scored first to make it 2-1, and then 95th and 97th, Rennes scored two goals. The second one, given offside, and then the VAR ruling for the goal. So the whole stadium had to wait a bit and then just exploded. It was quite incredible on Friday night. And Rennes doing really well and closing down a bit the gap with Marseille in second.
Right.
And because Lyon didn't win, for example, as well, they lost at Nice and Nantes got beaten. They were fourth before the weekend. So it looks like Rennes and Marseille at the moment are sort of edging away from the others.
Okay. Rennes with their best points total at this point of a French top flight season ever.
And their 17-year-old prodigy, Kamavinga, who was very lucky on the two non-goals, but was outstanding, I thought, in the game again and going from strength to strength.
Brilliant. Okay. Up next, it's La Liga and that Madrid derby.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power.
¡Oh! ¡Qué pelota! ¡Mendy centro! ¡Benzema! ¡Gol!
Karim Benzema scoring his first ever goal against Atletico at the Bernabeu.
Well, he's been very good in the past against Atletico, despite not scoring. I remember that one of the best actions of Benzema in his Real Madrid stint was three dribbles in the Champions League against Godin, Jiménez and Juanfran, possibly, in the Champions League. That was replayed all and all over again by Real Madrid TV. But yeah, the truth is that he has scored the 30% of the Real Madrid League goals this season, Karim Benzema. 13 goals in a Real Madrid derby that, as we said last week, it was going to be a 1-0 or a 2-0 derby, no more than that, because none of the teams scored many goals, and on the other hand, they defend very well. So it was a really, really good game in which Atletico de Madrid proved that they have some pride left, despite having so many players in the sidelines. I mean, the likes of Jiménez, Costa, Trippier, Joao Félix, Koke weren't there.
And Morata going out in this game as well.
Yes, and he may miss the first leg against Liverpool. I mean, there is an 80% chance that he will play that game in the Champions League. But of course, this is another casualty for Diego Pablo Simeone. We don't know if Diego Costa is going to be ready for the game against Liverpool, and probably Joao Félix neither.
Incredible. 1-0, as you say, for Real Madrid. They've only conceded 13 goals after 22 Liga games, which is their best defensive record ever at this point of a season. What a huge contrast to the derby they played at the start of the season, which was 7-3 to Atleti. And everyone drew a lot of conclusions about what was going to happen to the two clubs. How wrong we all were, because Real Madrid, the top of the table, Diego Simeone's Atleti now in sixth place. They've only scored one goal in their last five matches in all competitions, and Edinson Cavani stayed in Paris. What happened there?
Yeah, well, Jules, I'm sure that he will be able to chip in here. Cerezo, the Atletico de Madrid president, Enrique Cerezo, said that it was shameful how some agents and relatives meddle in the transfer business. He said literally, "We are not here to be robbed," referring to Edinson Cavani's agent,
right,
because apparently he wanted to get a good commission out of it. So that is what Atletico de Madrid president said.
But that's not true, right? You know that. It's not true. The fact is that PSG wanted 20 million euros and Atleti only offered 15, then maybe 18 with bonuses. And PSG said, unless you give 20, we're never going to let him go. So
Edinson Cavani's agent was saying that I'm not having my player pretty much out of the team the whole month of January because I want a commission. It's because I want him to have quality minutes at Atletico de Madrid. That's more or less what he said. All that said, Atletico de Madrid don't have a lot of firepower up front. And for the Champions League first leg, it could be the scenario that Joao Felix and Diego Costa are not there yet. And it could be possible that Álvaro Morata doesn't play it either. In which case,
wow,
I don't know who will play there. Probably Vitolo and Correa together, but none of them are strikers, which is a very complicated situation for them, obviously.
Yeah,
but I think Zidane deserves a lot of credit for the win in the derby, because he got his team wrong at the beginning, because they played that 4-5-1 formation that worked in the Super Cup but didn't really work on Saturday, and he changed at halftime, taking Toni Kroos, which kind of have happened to him often, to be taken off after just 45 minutes.
And Isco
as well. Mm-hmm. And even putting Lucas Vasquez and Vinicius and going back to the 4-3-3 made a huge difference. And that their second half was much better. And I think they deserve to win.
This is something that is really remarkable. The many faces that really this Real Madrid generation has had, and the many styles that they have been able to master. Because this Real Madrid team, a couple of years ago, when they won the Champions League, they weren't good defensively. And they had a very similar squad to this one.
True.
Perhaps with the greatest exception of having Cristiano Ronaldo up front. And they knew that Cristiano was going to do the job and score 40 goals per season. And they knew that maybe they didn't have to be so Cartesian when it came to defending. This time, they know that they cannot score as many goals. And Zinedine Zidane has made this team a really good defensive superpower.
If we're going to explain rainbow flicks, can you just outline what you mean by Cartesian?
A Cartesian person is someone who is very devoted to the job they do.
Okay.
Yeah, tremendously.
And
like a Swiss clock.
How do you say it? Oh, right, nice.
Cartesiano.
Cartesiano.
Cartesian in French.
Yeah, you have that same expression.
Yeah.
Okay, interesting.
I guess that in English you will say Cartesian.
But Calvinist.
Not yet. No, Calvinist is slightly different. Thing. But... Stakhanovist is one that
we use that one as well. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But that's
it's different. Cartesian
kind of
is more like having like a real care for every single detail of the things you do.
And being really straight.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cartesian.
Interesting. Second team in Madrid right now. It's not Atleti, is it?
No, it's Getafe. Right. And they, unfortunately for Athletic de Bilbao, they beat them 2-0 at San Mamés with a team, Getafe, that resembles what Atletico de Madrid was and what Athletic de Bilbao wants to be. Strong defensively and try to make the most of the few opportunities they create. It's unbelievable to see this Getafe team, which, by the way, they are playing against Ajax in the Europa League, and I believe that they are going to give Ajax a really hard time. In the first half against Athletic de Bilbao, if you take the stopwatch and you put it on every time the game is in play, I'm sure that they played like 13, 14 minutes in the first half, because Getafe stops the game all the time. Every time the other team has the ball, they do plenty of tactical faults, to the point that normally they get like 7 or 8 average yellow cards per game, the Getafe players. But they've got a style, and they've got a manager who has implemented it with many rejects that weren't wanted by some other teams. They've got a president, Ángel Torres, who works very well the Spanish second tier and third tier. He knows many players in those categories, and he brings the best of it to the Getafe team. That put all together with a manager like Bordalás, who has never denied that he is there to get a better job in the future.
Okay.
Well, it makes a hell of a cocktail.
So they got into the Europa League last season.
Yes.
Could they, they're now in the top four. What are their odds on staying there?
Last season they finished fifth.
They should have finished fourth really last season.
Yes, yes, yes. And I think that there is a chance for them to finish fourth because Sevilla doesn't look very convincing and Atletico de Madrid either. Real Sociedad is beautiful to watch but inconsistent. So there is a place up for grabs there. I think that Getafe can make it. Yeah, it's a team that, as I said before, they played against Athletic de Bilbao the other day with a 39% possession. They did 19 faults, 5 yellow cards, and I'm not criticizing this. I'm saying that the manager is maximizing his means, and that is something really remarkable. Bordalás is a manager that, by the way, if you check his physical transformation over the last couple of years, is something funny to watch, because he was a fat man with no beard in the past, and now he's got a goatee. He's very thin, but the thing is that the face looks totally different. It looks like someone who is running away from justice.
Right. Crikey. Crikey.
Face off.
Nice. So we've we'll just fly through one or two of the other stories. Obviously, Barcelona is one. They didn't buy a striker, but they did get a win, 2-1 over Levante, and that fatty Messi combo looks very, very promising up top.
Yes, unfortunately for Barcelona, January is over because they were trying to sign many strikers and they didn't manage to sign any. The last one being Cedric Bakambu. They aborted the signing when the player was flying to Barcelona.
Oh.
Yeah, because Abidal called Bakambu when he was in his stop in Hong Kong on his way to Barcelona and told him, no, finally we're not going to sign you. So, yeah, January is over. Barcelona has, at the minute, 18 senior team players in the squad, and they are going to play with them until the end of the season, unfortunately for them. And yeah, it was nice to see Ansu Fati scoring a brace. Barcelona played again with the 4-3-3 formation, which is something that they've been doing for the last 20 years until Quique Setién tried to implement a 3-5-2 system in the last couple of games. And they got one of these victories that explains a little bit what Barcelona has been this season. They are capable of doing 20-25 very good minutes, and then they lose control of the game, and they lose focus, and Levante was close to draw the game, because in the aggregate, they had a couple of good approaches to Marc-André Ter Stegen's goal.
Right, okay. Both goals for Barca coming from 17-year-old Fati, both of them set up by Leo Messi. Quick word on the Yellow Submarines, Villarreal, who had a 3-1 win over Osasuna. Paco Alcacer, who they just signed, a club record signing from Borussia Dortmund, was on the score sheet?
Yes.
As was Santi Cazorla.
Yes, well, Villarreal has done really well in the transfer market. Santi Cazorla is a player that nobody expected to be healthy again, or at least available to play football, and he's been pivotal to this Villarreal team, to the point that I wouldn't be surprised if he starts for Spain in the Euro.
Okay.
Yeah. And then Paco Alcácer is a very clever signing by Villarreal because they needed a striker. And he's a player who is from the area, by the way. He's from Valencia. And he has scored plenty of goals when he has been given the chance. I don't know his fitness, maybe Rafael can tell us. But he seemed to be sharp and he seemed to be really well adapted to Villarreal from the first day.
Well, fitness has been an issue for him at Dortmund. When he initially came, they were saying maybe Barcelona did not train properly. Maybe that's the issue. You know, once he gets going for us, it'll be better. But he's never been consistently fit over many months. There's always been setbacks and little niggly problems. Recently, though, I think he just looked completely like a guy who just didn't want to be there. He was sort of by himself, very much sort of trying to get away, to escape Dortmund. And I'm sure he'll be mentally in a much better place being back in Spain again.
Villarreal is one of those teams, James, that could make it to Europe this season. Last year, they were fighting to avoid relegation, and they decided to sign Raúl Albiol. Maybe he's not the best defender, but at the same time, he brought experience to the squad. Altogether with Pau, the young central defender, they have created a really good society in there, and Villarreal has conceded 30 goals this season, which is not a lot if you compare it to last season.
Okay, they are currently 5 points outside the Champions League positions, but they won 5 of their last 6. We'll conclude our look at the Spanish weekend, if we may, Alvaro, with word on the man sent off twice in 2 minutes.
Yeah, that happened in the second division. It was Cristóbal Márquez of Fuenlabrada. Playing against Girona, he was sent off in the first place. He walked down the tunnel, but as the referee checked the action again in the VAR, he realized that it was in a second yellow card, he overturned it. The player came back on the pitch. He kept having an argument with the other player.
So he comes straight back on the pitch and he goes straight over and starts having a problem with Stuani?
Yes, and basically he came back incensed. I mean, he didn't think much. And he was on a second yellow card. And this is something pretty unprecedented, I will say. And yeah, shame on the player, because at the end, I believe that when Fuenlabrada ended up losing, and Stuani, by the way, scored the winning goal.
Incredible, incredible. All right, still to come in today's show, loads of great questions from you, listener, and Italy.
You're listening to the Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
Molto rapido, molto veloce e preciso del centrocampista del Napoli.
Back dalla mezzo destra in aria, Quagliarella al volo! Grandissimo gol di Fabio Quagliarella, che non esulta, ma i suoi gol contro il Napoli. Che strana sorte, che strano.
Serie A. Woo. James. Hey, now we, as I mentioned, recording this unusually on a Tuesday because of the unexploded bomb and that, which gave us the opportunity to, or gives us the opportunity to reference the terrific match which took place at the Marassi in Genova on Monday night, Sampdoria-Napoli.
Yep, 4-2 win for Napoli. The Gattuso cure continues to take
San
hold.
San Gennaro.
Exactly, the saint of Naples. And we did get to see something that we haven't seen a lot this season, which was a wonder goal from Fabio Quagliarella.
Wow.
Because Quagliarella, a volley from just...
Is he like 55 now or something?
Outside the box.
38
well,
something.
Remember he went on that incredible run last year where he scored in 11 straight games, matching the record established by Gabriel Batistuta. He was the top scorer in the league last year. It hasn't really happened for him since Marco Giampaolo left for Milan and was then sacked by Milan. And Samp have struggled for goals generally, but yeah, certainly one for the highlight reel, which is already plentiful. And he always scores these kind of goals against his hometown club, Napoli. I think we've done a... did we do a Golazzo on his story?
We did do a Golazzo on the incredible Quagliarella story.
Yeah. Background in Naples and the stalker. But to go back to Napoli, yeah, it does look like they are finally getting the results that some of their performances earlier on under Gattuso deserved.
Two straight wins in the league. They've beaten Juventus and now Sampdoria, and they knocked Lazio, high-flying Lazio, out of the cup.
Yeah, exactly. Mertens back in the team, back on the score sheet as well.
Good goal.
And you can tell, you know, I think one of our concerns about Napoli after the January transfer window was that this team is going to be moved on. It's going to be broken up. They feel it's an end of a cycle. They've already signed a number of players with next season in mind. And this is what the final 3 or 4 months, some of these players, be it Mertens, be it Koulibaly. You know, there's always a doubt whether, knowing that, they will deliver and give their best between now and the end of the season. But certainly I think Gattuso has got them all on message. And, you know, perhaps they can get back into the hunt for Europe, certainly. But Champions League, I think, is going to be very complicated because already it's very stratified. You've got Juventus, Inter and Lazio miles out in front of everyone else. Then 10 points between Lazio and the two teams that are duking it out for fourth, which is Atalanta and Roma. And if you look at Napoli in terms of Europa League, what, they're on 30 points and they're only 2 points behind Cagliari and Parma in that final six spots. So it could happen.
Could happen. They move back into the top half of the table anyway, just in 10th place. Up top, Juve remains 3 points clear of Inter. Juve, as you mentioned back at the start, with that 3-0 victory in one of the classic Italian grudge games over Fiorentina. Two of the goals, though, proved very unsettling for Fiorentina's new American owner.
Yeah, who went on Italian TV, every channel that has the rights to football, then went through the mix zone, then basically found any kind of reporter, anyone who was willing to kind of, I don't know, be interviewed. And he let everyone know that he was disgusted, that Juventus are already a very good team, they don't need help from referees. And I think conflating some of the decisions that have gone against Fiorentina, not only in this game, but other recent games, conflating them with Juventus and the system, I think was very incendiary and certainly prompted a very swift response from Juventus, who sent out Pavel Nedved, the vice president, to talk about this immediately afterwards.
Was that Pavel Nedved or Pavel Nedved? Because his son's also Pavel Nedved.
Ah, right? Pavel Nedved Jr., right. You mean. Yeah. No, it was Pavel. Pavel Sr. came out and recommended that maybe Rocco put the kettle on,
right,
and pour himself a cup of tea.
Did he say that?
And cool down before coming out in front of the media.
Well, it's probably wise.
Then Rocco said, I don't talk to Nedved. I'm the president. I talk to other presidents.
I talk to Agnelli. I mean, come on. So, you know, you go and have a cup of tea. And then there was the Panchina d'Oro award, yes, which is the golden bench for the coach of the year at Coverciano yesterday. Gianpiero Gasperini of Atalanta won it, deservedly so. And Comiso decided to go because there was an opportunity to meet the president of the Italian Football Federation and make his voice heard there. And he just doubled down, essentially, not backing down, even though if you look at those decisions that did go against Fiorentina in that game, certainly the first one, Stonewall penalty. And the second one...
It's a bit more debatable, but we don't have changed.
You've seen him given.
Yeah.
But as they say in Brazil, quem não chora não mama. Who doesn't cry doesn't get a suck on the bottle. Or on the teeth.
Oh my God.
Yeah. But I think this is Fiorentina raising their voice, not only about this refereeing decision or these refereeing decisions. It's, they don't want to be seen to be pushed around by these big clubs in the league. There's a certain sense that there's a lot of foreign ownership coming into Italy and that the old established clubs maybe see that as a bit of a threat.
Ooh.
But there's a way, I guess, there's a way and a context to do it. And Comiso, this is all new to him, right? He owns the New York Cosmos, but they're playing a Pep League in the US.
But
this
to be
is
fair,
like
well, he's actually entered entirely into the Italian milieu. This is classic. You know, you mentioned Gaucci, who passed on last week. That this is entirely the kind of thing he would be
but
doing.
Learning in the sense that of not doing that thing, because that's not helping either him or Fiorentina either.
Well, I guess that's one of the questions. Is that what you had to do to help your team? Is that the game you had to play?
I think there is a game behind the game.
The game behind
that
the game.
That was 15 years ago, though.
No, I'm not talking about that. I'm saying that in terms of political and positioning yourself, you can't allow yourself to be seen as a pushover.
I think I get that. But you can lobby in a different way than just doing every interview by saying, like,
for example,
they were better than your team.
But I think that the perception is that Comiso's playing as much to the supporters as he is to the federation.
Yes, maybe. Yeah, I get that.
Yeah, because if I'm not mistaken, when he first came onto the scene as a potential buyer of an Italian club, much was made of his background as a Juventus fan. And I don't think he's had to disavow any of that, but certainly he has fully bought into being Mr. Fiorentina, standing up, representing Florentines. It's one of the reasons why that ownership group, both him and his chief executive job, are so popular in Florence at the moment, because they seem to be really standing up for themselves and that club.
All right, James, let's rattle through one or two other stories. Inter started their brand new signing, Christian Eriksen, also Victor Moses and Ashley Young in their 2-0 win away at Udinese. Alexis Sanchez came on as well, won a penalty, but two goals for Romelu Lukaku, I guess, is the headline once again.
Yeah, complicated game for Inter this, because they were missing his strike partner, Lautaro Martinez.
Suspended.
Brozovic wasn't entirely fit, so started the game on the bench. So it had a new feel to it, this Inter side, because they had Young and Moses on the wings, and they had a midfield with Barella and Vecino playing in front of that back three, and then Eriksen pushed forward.
And how did Eriksen get on?
I don't think he affected the game as much as they would have wanted to. Conte afterwards was saying this is entirely normal. He's only done 4 training sessions. It's a new system for him, even though he's played sort of in a... Every now and again, Spurs played with a back three with him pushed up during his time in the Premier League. I think it's going to take time. I think Lukaku completely changed that game, which had been going against Inter. It looked like it was going to be very, very difficult for them to get a win. And what a finish from him to put it through Neutink's legs and beat Juan Musso. And then Alexis came on and made a real difference. He'd been very disappointing in the cup in midweek. And those two changes that Conte made, bringing Brozovic on and Alexis, helped them win that game. So the depth that Conte claimed he didn't have in the past, now he does.
Brilliant. Nice for them to get a victory.
Do you think Sensi, Barella and Eriksen can all play together? And play well together, or it's just two of those three in
certain games they can. Certain stages of games they can. I think he would like to have a bit of more ballast in midfield. Yeah. And also, I think Brozovic is the one player who, if fit, will always play.
So then you play two of the three, two of Barella and Cienega.
Yeah, or we might see, I mean, it depends whether who they give a rest to, be it Lautaro or Lukaku, but now they have the option to play a Sanchez and Eriksen or a Sensi off a striker.
A bit higher on the pitch.
James, we saw the enthusiastic reception that Eriksen received by some of the Inter fans. Just wondering, is there any sense or any criticism of this policy being a little bit short term? I understand that Conte wants to win now and that's why he wants his experienced guys, but there is a season after that and a season after that. What will they do with all these players?
Well, I think he felt the squad as a whole was lacking in experience.
It is a really young team. I mean, by Italian standards, that is. Even this weekend, it was a young...
I mean, he started this game, for example, Lautaro was out. Lautaro's 23.
Right.
He started with Sebastiano Esposito up front, who's a teenager.
17?
He's a 17-year-old. Lukaku's young by Italian standards. Sensi, Barella, both in their early 20s. Skriniar in his early 20s as well.
The fella at the back, what's his name?
Skriniar? No, De Vrij?
No, the Italian one.
Bastoni. Bastoni started in this game as well, under 21 international, who's a very good player and has forced Gadin, really, to be left out of the side. So I think there's actually quite a good blend. And if you look at the transfer window as a whole, summer and winter, that team's got younger, I would say. I think in terms of paying 20 million now for a player that they could have got free in the summer, that's a debate that hasn't really been had, because I think there's just this will in Italy to see a title race that they're prepared to overlook the business case for taking someone free when maybe Eriksen can keep into in a title race between now and the end of the season, and the hope is help them win the title for the first time in a decade.
Who's their backup keeper?
Daniele Padelli.
Right.
But there's another one.
Oh.
That's the one you're meaning, isn't it?
Well, no, because Handanovic is probably going to be out for the derby, is that right?
Yeah, so he has, I think, a microfracture of his pinky.
Right.
Nice little finger.
I can sympathise. That must be terrible.
Oh, yes, so you do as well.
Well, mine's not fractured.
Same leg.
Okay.
Debilitating
but
injury.
I thought we were going to transition neatly from one figlio d'arte to another, because guess who was on the bench for Inter at the weekend? It was Deki Stankovic's son, who plays in goal for Inter's under-19s. Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah. Okay.
Nicely done, then.
But Handanovic potentially out, or almost certainly out, for the derby, which is coming up next weekend. Speaking of derby and their opponents there, Milan, the big news there is they had a 1-1 draw with Hellas Verona this weekend. Was the player who came on in the kind of 92nd minute, but this has been the big headline here.
Daniel Maldini came on. James.
Yeah,
18 years of age.
Yeah.
And you can look at it and say, Paolo is, his father is a technical director at the club, that they've let a lot of these players go in the winter and not replace them. It was an opportunity, I suppose, for him to get in. But it doesn't always happen this way. You look at Daniel's older brother, Christian, who also came through the youth ranks at Milan but never made a first-team appearance. Christian, I think, has bounced around various different clubs. I think he was in Gibraltar.
Wasn't he in Malta at one point?
I think, yes, one of those. Whereas Daniel is not a defender, has been signed to a very good agent who's got a lot of the best young Italian talent, and kind of has been, I wouldn't say lighting up, because I think the premier talent at the moment is on the other side of the tracks. It's Esposito, who played the weekend for Inter. But Maldini scored, 10 goals in 25 games for the Primavera last year.
He's playing as a kind of number 10 type.
Playing a number 10, second striker. I think there's still a kind of realism about he's young. We don't really know what his best position is yet. Mm. But he's certainly someone who has been regularly scoring for the youth team and has been part of the under-18s at Italy, for Italy as well. So he's not a raccomandato, as they say. Not nepotism.
Right.
Again, feel-good story around Milan going into this weekend's derby.
What about this feel-good story about Ralf Rangnick coming in as the new manager?
Oh, really?
Yes, well, I think this is very interesting because what I would say is very indicative of this path that Milan are taking is if you look at what they did in the transfer window over January, they let Piontek go for money. They've let Suso go in the hope that they will get money for him. They've let Caldara go back to Atalanta. They've let Pepe Reina go to Aston Villa mainly to get him off the wage bill. And they didn't really reinvest any of that money. And I think the reason is because there is, let's say, uncertainty as to who their manager will be. Well, let's say uncertainty whether it will be Stefano Pioli in the summer. And there is the expectation that there'll be, obviously, a significant amount of input as to how that team is assembled and who comes in from a prospective new manager. So Milan have been very much keeping their powder dry, I would say. There have been these reports in Germany of contact between the club and Ralf Rangnick, not only as a coach, but as a prospective sporting director. I believe he is someone who appeals strongly to the Elliott side of the Milan operation. So I think that is a story to watch.
That'd be huge.
Between now and the end of the season.
Okay. The other story we should mention is Torino, who after last week's 7-0 thrashing got done 4-0 at relegation strugglers Lecce this time round, at which point Urbano Cairo, the team's owner, said, Walter Mazzarri, you're fired.
Out.
Yeah, what's happened to Torino?
Well, they got into Europe, obviously, last season. That was the stated objective of the club when they brought in Mazzarri to replace Sinisa Mihailovic. They were a very solid team under Mazzarri until the start of this season.
When there's a feeling that... Then it started to rain, or what happened?
Well, yeah, they entered the Europa League preliminaries. They came back, started the season very early. That was, again, part of... because Milan, remember, pulled out of competing in the Europa League. So it was a bit of a last-minute preparation for them. There's a sense that that caught up with them. Certainly that they weren't able to really get over that Wolves defeat. They had Nicolas Nkoulou, who decided, I would like to leave in the final week of the summer transfer window. And
he's
was told
the captain as well. I watched the game the other day.
And was told he wasn't going to be leaving. He sulked. And yeah, that kind of destabilised things a little bit. And yeah, I think the other teams around them have got better as well. Torino's position isn't disastrous. There's also been a lot of kind of discontent around the club, the fan base, not very happy with the brand of football that has been played. And when you lose 7-0, you then go out of the cup 4-2.
Oh, yeah.
And you lose 4-0 to a side that has not won at home in Serie A since 2012. Then I think the game is up.
The jig is up. All right. Well, it certainly is for Mazzarri. Moreno Longo, the man who brought Frosinone up, is taking over, I think. Is that right?
Yeah, he won the Scudetto with Torino's under-19s.
That's nice.
Has been over here whilst being on gardening leave from Frosinone to learn some English.
Okay.
And the other story, James, which will probably be something to talk about next week when we come back, is that Roma will likely be under new ownership with the Friedkin Group currently.
What are your friends, James? Selling.
What can I say?
Well, to what extent that uncertainty has had an impact on the team, who, in the words of their own manager, Paolo Fonseca, the players have lost their heads. Just one win in five now for Roma. They were beaten 4-2 this weekend by a very lively-looking Sassuolo. Mm. But anyway, as you say, we can come back to that one next weekend. We'll be discussing all sorts of other things, a little bit of Turkish football for you, and some top questions from listeners in a moment or two. First, though, here's producer Charlie with Paddy Power.
Hello, listeners. Producer Charlie here with the one and only Lee Price from Paddy Power. Lee, we've got a winter break in the Premier League, but some huge games next weekend across Europe, like Bayern v Leipzig, the top two in Germany. What's going to happen?
Yeah, they're back on top of the standings, and just like last season on that big game against Dortmund, we're backing Bayern to come out on top here. They're 1-3 to win the game after their winning streak. Leipzig, on the other hand, have been rather patchier. Turns out Red Bull gives you wings, but not necessarily wins. They're 5-1 to take the 3 points. The draw is 9-2. But it's not just a meeting of the division's top two teams. It's also a battle, of course, between the leading scorers. Robert Lewandowski is 2-5 favourite to win that battle over the course of the season, with Timo Werner 7-4 to finish as top scorer in Germany. Erling Haaland, have to mention him, has been backed into 80-1 in the betting after another goal-filled weekend for him. He is remarkable.
It's the Milan derby in Serie A. Will Zlatan dent Antonio Conte's title hopes?
Yeah, this is how you do it, Inter. This is how you sign an old past it, in inverted commas, Premier League player and make it work. Zlatan's done well since going there and will be among the favourites to score in this derby because, let's face it, that'd be a classic Zlatan thing to do. That said, Inter probably have to win this game, and we think they will. It's 10-11 they see off their City rivals, with Milan 11-4 to get the win. The draw is 23-10. And not to depress anyone, but Juventus are now 1-3 to win Serie A, with Inter out to 4-1.
And there's a full midweek programme in Ligue 1. How about Saint-Étienne v Marseille, Claude Puel versus AVB?
Two very different managers. One's dreamy, the other sends you to sleep. But that's just my personal preferences. Our traders, though, are leaning in a similar direction. They make Marseille the favourites here. It's 7-5 they continue their charge to be the best of the rest in Ligue 1. Saint-Étienne, on the other hand, are towards the bottom of one of the most bloated middles I've seen since looking in the mirror this morning. 6 points separate 4th from 15th. They're 15-8 to win. The draw is 21-10.
You can find out these odds and more at paddypower.com or the Paddy Power app. Prices are accurate at the time of recording. It's over 18s only. Terms and conditions apply. And when the fun stops, stop. Ooh, let's have a look in the postbag, Jules.
Yes.
This first one is for Alvaro. Valter Ingborsen says, Alvaro, what's the goalkeeper situation now for Spain? Both Kepa and De Gea have had ho-hum seasons. Is anyone else in the frame?
Well, it looked like Kepa had the upper hand, especially after autumn. And his the fact that he didn't play against Leicester City, was it? The first time in his career that he doesn't play for a decision that is based on sports performance,
right,
and nothing contractual, or no problems with Mauricio Sarri for saying no to leaving the pitch. This is the first time that Kepa is facing something like this. I want to see how he recovers from this. It's more or less up for grabs who the Spanish goalkeeper is. De Gea and Kepa will fight for it until the end. It looked like that back in November. It still looks like that now. And I don't think that Roma goalkeeper, Pau, will be able to step up and take the place of De Gea and Kepa. I believe that he's going to be one of these guys. I would say that most likely Kepa, because De Gea was the goalkeeper of Spain 12 months ago, and Kepa little by little took over.
Finding a replacement for De Gea is a big, big question, of course. Moving along, that red-haired dude says the Turkish Super League has to be discussed. A recently promoted Sivasspor atop the big three, Galatasaray, Fenerbahce and Besiktas, aren't in the top four. How do you see the league finishing up this season? Well, that's got to be one for you, Jules.
Yeah, the top Sivasspor, which is like the red hair... What's his
dude.
Name? Dude, yeah, he's right. A big, big surprise.
Yeah.
The loss of the weekend to Gaziantep, 5-1, though, which was a big surprise.
Mm.
And the only 2 points clear of Başakşehir in second place. And
it's
guess,
tight, isn't it?
And guess who's playing who on Saturday?
Who's playing who on Saturday?
Sivasspor and Başakşehir. So
wow.
First against second on Saturday. But it's true that Fenerbahce, Galatasaray and Besiktas in the fifth, sixth and seventh are struggling
so
a bit.
Fenerbahce, like, they're 4 points off the top. Galatasaray are 5 points back. Besiktas all the way down in eighth. But they've just picked up Kevin Prince-Boateng from Fiorentina. Woo!
Prince, who moves every January.
Yeah.
Barca, and Besiktas...
But the bad news this weekend was that John Obi Mikel, the former Chelsea midfielder, was a victim of racial abuse in the Trabzonspor win against
Fenerbahce.
Against Fenerbahce on Sunday or Saturday afternoon.
Night, yeah,
Saturday night, which was a really bad one. And
what did they suspend the game or what happened?
No. I think the game went on. It finished with a red card for Luis Gustavo as well, the former Bayern Munich and Marseille midfielder. And it was really bad. It was a toxic atmosphere, a really bad one with the away fans there and everybody has condemned the incident, but it just once again, like in every league, it doesn't reflect good at all on Fenerbahce and their fans, and also on the Turkish league in general.
Right, Fenerbahce, you have Adil Rami and former Newcastle man Emre playing for them these days, lining up for Trabzonspor, Daniel Sturridge, who'd been doing brilliantly for them just before
third
the break.
Now, Trabzonspor, and they're only 3 points behind Sivasspor, so very much so as well in the title race for Sturridge and Obi Mikel.
Right. Mr. Marco UK says, how about you touch Porto Benfica this weekend? Well, that will be played this coming weekend. So how about we touch?
There's too much gap between the two, though. I think they're 5 points clear Benfica or 6 points clear. Before, it was almost like the one who wins this would win the league. Now, even if Benfica lose this one.
Right. Sorry about that, Mr. Marker UK. I am not a piece of cake. That's a listener's handle name.
Okay.
Handle. Not handle name. That's a listener's handle. Yeah. Says, after years of being accused of being mostly one-horse races for league titles, how are the various European leagues, your Bundesligas, your Serie A's, your Ligue 1's, looking at Liverpool's ridiculous dominance in the EPL this season?
With nothing but respect and admiration of that team, I think.
Yeah. Absolutely. What kind of answer was he expecting? Like, we're not even...
I think there's a degree of schadenfreude, certainly in Germany, about the fact that the Premier League, self-described most exciting league in the world, et cetera, for a third time running is kind of a pre-gone conclusion.
But it's not the third time running, because last season it was really tight.
No, yeah, the year before, the 100-point year for City,
For the last two and a half years, all the possible records, not only of Premier League, but also the English top flight, they have been broken by Pep Guardiola and Jurgen Klopp. And when that happened in Spain with Mourinho and Guardiola in 2012,
right.
I heard people saying that Spain was a farmers league and all that. Well, the same thing happened in England.
Saying the Premier League is the farmers league now, right. Yes?
I'm not saying that.
Yeah, that's what you just said.
Not at all.
That's what you just said.
Where does this expression farmers league come from? Because you hear it.
It's a social media
thing. Who are these farmers and where do they play?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
we should buy the rights.
But of course, this is counterbalanced by the Klopp admiration, which is growing and growing in Germany. I think if he now, which I think is very likely, gets Liverpool over the line after 30 years of hurt, it would only magnify his status as the most successful German manager abroad.
Just for the record, I never say that the Premier League is a farmer's league.
That's what you've just said. I mean,
but what is a farmer's league?
It's okay. You can have your opinion. But
you can rewind, listener.
Yeah. Then know what you think.
So, there you go. That was this weekend around the continent. Can't wait to hear what happens next time out. We'll be back hopefully at the regular time, bright and early on Tuesday morning next week. So do join us for that. For now, many, many thanks to Alvaro Romeo, James Horncastle, Raphael Honigstein and Julien Laurent.
Thank you.
And you, listener. Have yourselves a great week and weekend. We'll catch you afterwards.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, please email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. Keep up to date with everything across our Totally Football network at The Totally Show on Twitter. And make sure you check out our brand new website too, thetotallyfootballshow.com.
Hello listeners, I'm Caroline Barker, host of the Totally Football League Show. I'm joined each week by Sam Parkin. Say hello, Sam.
Hi, Caroline.
By Adrian Clark. Say hello, Adrian.
Hello.
And the Bolton Wanderers fan too. Not Adrian, but Joe Cridley. Looking forward to League Two?
Yes.
Each week we go headfirst into the EFL to bring you the latest from the pitches to the next crisis to whatever Ian Holloway has said now. From Leeds to Luton, Sunderland to Plymouth, Swindon to Stevenage and everything in between. If it's the EFL you want, we've got you covered, haven't we, Ollie?
Just a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down.
Your guess is as good as ours. That's the Totally Football League Show, out every Wednesday.
In the most delightful way. It's brilliant. I just love it.
Muddy Knees Media.